Hello and welcome back to the Virtual Light broadcast. In 1979, author, teacher, consciousness researcher and naturopathic physician Penny Kelly had a full spontaneous Kundalini awakening that completely changed her life. Her experiences over the last 35 years have been enough to blow many people's minds. They certainly blew mine when I read about them, and they've all been chronicled in 7 books. Some of those adventures included strange things like little brown men turning up in her kitchen, giving her information about the future, much of which has come to pass, and also elves on her land telling her how she can increase the yield of grapes using organic gardening. Penny Kelly joins us today to tell us some of what she's experienced and why it is so important now, at this moment in time, for us all to increase our consciousness. Penny, welcome.
Nice to be here.
So, tell us a little bit of the background around that Kundalini awakening experience.
Well, it was totally unexpected. I never heard of it. It was something that, when it occurs, it is immediately life-changing. It's life-threatening, I will add that. But the benefits, if you stick with it, and you go through the process of changing who you are, the benefits are tremendous in terms of consciousness, wisdom, grace, power, you know, all that kind of stuff.
So at the time, you didn't know anything about it. You had to find out what had happened to you. You were working as an engineer at the Chrysler Corporation. You changed your job. You became a consciousness researcher.
Right.
And you had all these strange experiences. So tell us about these men in brown robes.
One of the things that happens with Kundalini is that you have unlimited consciousness. There are no limits, none. So you read people's minds, you see the future, you see what's happening across the world, etc., in depth. And you see other beings, okay? So, and one of the things that happens in your energy body is that the lights turn on. Literally, you become a bigger light, as you know.
Does that mean you also become a magnet for other beings?
Yes, you do. So I was in my kitchen and I was getting supper ready, and you know, all of a sudden I had this "who's in here" kind of feeling, and I turned around and there was this group of little men in brown robes, bald as a billiard, wearing, you know, these floor-length robes, and just these, they were brilliantly lit. And for me, it was like, oh no, something new in the theater of perception. And I kind of freaked out the first time. And the second time they showed up, I was totally rude, which I was then felt guilty about. And then the third time, I thought, okay, they wanted to show me some pictures. They were very businesslike and they were very cheerful. And that attitude of kind of cheerful businesslike, I kind of liked that by the time they came around the third time. And so I said, okay, I'll look at your pictures. And I thought they would go away. But they had 2 years worth of pictures and visits. And so they started out, you know, just one visit after the next. They came maybe once a month, or sometimes there'd be, you know, visits a couple weeks in a row, but always really powerful stuff.
They told you about the future of humanity. They told you about the Berlin Wall coming down. I want to read something that they said to you 30 years ago. It is important for people to understand that their leader is their own creation, created with their own power, brought before them to demonstrate what they are capable of. This leader embodies the reality of their situation in all of its aspects, whether that situation is love or fear. That sounds like today.
That sounds like today. Yeah, and they were very specific about leadership and how did we get to good leadership and how did we work our way through mistakes of our own choosing. And they were very, you know, it was through them I first learned about the cabal. It was through them that I first really understood what I wanted to see in a leader. And we haven't gotten there yet.
No,
we haven't gotten there.
Not yet.
Yeah, not
so
yet.
Did they actually tell you about him and what he was going to do and how it was going to confound everybody?
No, they weren't specific in a lot of areas. There were some areas they were very specific. They were very specific about Mikhail Gorbachev. They showed me him. I remembered, you know, I didn't remember the name, but I remembered the stain on his birthmark, on his forehead. And they said, this man is the linchpin for the unfolding of your future. If he does not do his piece, then you don't stand a chance. And he did his piece. And so the next piece was that we had to recognize the corruption. And the next piece was that we had to deal with the fact that we didn't have a government. We had a business.
Oh, yeah, that was fascinating.
Yeah. And that the reign of business would last about, they said 30 years, 50 if we were lucky, if they were lucky. And I said, well, when does that start? And they said, it's already started. It's almost to an end. This was 1980 and 81. And so we are, at the point of the end. So I think, you know, what we have now is the end of the business reign. And unfortunately, after that, the U.S. broke up. You know, the euro broke up. I didn't say anything about the euro or the European Union. A lot of nations just collapsed. And people returned to what I'm going to call local and regional governance.
Yeah. Nationalism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They also gave you some information about the role and purpose of plants, which was quite eye-opening. Tell us a little bit about that, because that the natural world is very dear to your heart.
Yeah, it is. Gosh, you know, I don't know where to begin because there's been so much that I have learned since then. It's hard to separate. What did I learn from them and what have I taught, you know, or learned myself? But the thing that they wanted us to understand was that plants were to be communicated with. That was then backed up in my relationship with the elves where it was like, you know, what? You know, I kind of poo-pooed it when the robes were trying to get me to communicate. But they said there would be a huge famine. And I was like, how can we have a famine? We have all this technology. And they said, you do not understand the relationship of plants to humans. You know, plants are, when you are raising a plant, your energy field is like 16 feet in diameter, and it washes over those plants. And the plant's task is to make sure that the human is perfectly nourished and perfectly balanced. And so what happens when you wash your energy system over that plant, it's calibrating where your frequencies are off. And then it changes its chemistry to correct that.
Now, I think in the Anastasia books, they talked about how if you have a piece of land or you move into a new house, you know, you don't do anything with the garden. Just leave it.
Oh.
And then the plants that grow, the weeds that grow, will be weeds that are growing just for you.
That is true. I have a farm, and so what I saw when we went organic, just 100% organic, cold turkey, was that there was a succession of weeds over about 8 years of time that came up. One year they were all, you know, a certain kind of plant. The next year they were all a different kind. The next year there was something still different. And I remember seeing waves of white flowers on these plants. And the next year waves of yellow. And the next year waves of purple. And what was happening was that they were uptaking certain mineral elements and imbalances in the soil and balancing that and renewing the soil. That is so important. Most food that we have today doesn't have any minerals in it, doesn't have any life-carrying energies. And, you know, and then they process it to death.
Yeah. So, you know, the books, and there's three volumes of Energy and Consciousness, and they're all just really gripping. We can't cover.
No way.
You know, even a fraction of it.
No.
But I do want to talk about the your work with Dr. Levengood, because Dr. Levengood was a scientist, deceased now, who did a lot of research with plants and the soil around UFO sites, and measuring, you know, trees, the energy of trees around UFO sites.
Yes.
So crop circles, you know.
Amazing work.
So tell us how you met him and what you learned from his work.
I think it was about 1996. I got a phone call from a strange woman who said, "Have you heard of Dr. Levengood?" And I'm like, "No, you know, I haven't." She said, "Well, he would like to meet with you. I read your book." She said, "I found your book, Evolving Human, in a garage sale. And I read it, and it saved my life. And I told Dr. Levengood that you had some very unusual abilities, and he's looking for people with unusual abilities." So I was, at the time, I was like, well, I have been wanting science and spirituality to come together, but I waited for a long time to call him. And then finally I called, and we met. And long story short, he was researching materials from crop circles. Amazing work. And, you know, and so I listened to his analysis, and I looked at his research, and I thought, oh my gosh, this guy is doing something amazing. So I was very interested in the science, because I love science to begin with. And so he eventually said to me, "Would you write about my work?" And I said, "Oh no. No, I can't do that, because I don't have the science background. I could never do it justice." And that was when he said, "Why don't you let me teach you? You know, you become my student." And so we started this mentorship, and we met every week for a couple hours. And I was tutored in plasma physics and biophysics and, you know, astrophysics and all kinds of stuff. And I came to really understand his work, the science side of it, in a deep way. He was not only discovering that that there was this amazing energy, you know, there's all kinds of stories out there about crop circles, and none of them are true. Almost none of them are true. But He was discovering that plants respond to people, that people respond to plants, just having a plant in the room, and that everything that touches, like if I touch this book or this table or this cup or you, your energy system will record that shift in energy and will remember that forever. And we did research into consciousness and energy, and discovered that energy, plasma, everything is made of plasma. Plasma responds directly and immediately to consciousness, and that whatever you're doing, whatever you're thinking, however you're moving your eyes, you know, all of that changes the pattern within the consciousness, within the energy body. So there was just some amazing work that came out of that.
While that was going on, you were also having these incredible adventures multidimensionally, visiting other realms.
Right.
I mean, what was the most standout experience for you?
Oh my gosh, I don't know if I could say. I think probably the 10,000 selves was the big shocker.
10,000 selves.
In volume one, Consciousness and Energy, volume one, I entered a dimension in which it was full of, I call it the 10,000 versions of myself. And they were, some of them were very like flesh and blood almost, and some of them were just these wisps of energy. And they were repeating the same thing over and over. Some of them were imaginary things. Some of them were, you know.
What was the purpose?
Well, what I learned from that is that every time you have a thought or you imagine yourself doing something, you know, you're actually creating a version of your own self, and you're spinning off energy that goes off to do that. We are incredibly powerful.
Can you do anything with that?
You can do anything with that.
No, I mean, could you could you harness?
Yes.
Something that you learned from another self?
Yes. Yes. So I did have conversations with a writer version of myself who was writing for magazines. And I had put a huge amount of effort into trying to get, you know, magazines to, you know, to accept some of my articles. And some of them did, and then said, oh, I'm sorry, we have to take this out and this because it will upset the advertisers. And I said, well, that's, you're just gutting the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it didn't, I couldn't never get it going because I wasn't willing to cut out the truth.
I think I'd like to do that. I could do with a couple more me's to do some of the chores.
Right.
Is it something one can easily do?
Easily.
Easily. Really?
Yeah, for instance, at one point, I had decided that, you know, I didn't want a crooked spine. You know, I sit at the computer and how you tend to, you know, you're mousing or you're typing. And so I thought, you know, I'm just going to start this little affirmation. My spine is long and perfectly shaped and perfectly healthy. And, you know, I started that. And I wasn't even all that regular with it. But about a year, maybe a year and a half later, this amazingly beautiful spine appeared right in front of me. And I didn't get the connection at first. It appeared three times before, on three different dates, before I realized, OMG, I think that's the spine I've been creating. So then I said, okay, let's start with the whole body. You know, I'm going to recreate my body. So I have been, you know, kind of playing with that. And so, you know, constantly renewing. And I think we don't need to age as fast as we're aging. Certainly, we don't need to be unhealthy. And so I have done all sorts of things with that capacity. You know, would you go do something for me? Would you go get something for me? Would you make sure something happens for me? So, you know, you end up with the capacity to harness consciousness, but then you have to bring that back in to yourself. It's kind of like soul retrieval.
Yeah.
You bring that back in, otherwise you're losing energy. And that was another big lesson. If you stop spinning off pieces of yourself and you bring everything back to center and you're totally present in the moment that you're in, then you begin to accumulate power. And power is the power to transform and evolve and to move past death. So we're moving toward becoming immortal beings. We used to be, and we've lost that. So, you know, we're slowly moving in that direction again. So that's my latest research.
One of the most important things I think that you're very conscious about sharing with people is how we evolve, how we ascend. And many people, especially in the spiritual arena, like to go out of their body and do it all with their mind. And you're adamant, it's all done through the body. It is only through the body that
it's
we can become light.
Only through the body, yeah. Yeah, that started when I was hearing a lot of people say, I'm just going to ascend, I'm out of here. And I was like, where are you going, you know? So, and I have a lot of interaction with people on the other side. You know, family, friends, etc. And I do take people who are getting ready to die over to the other side and give them tours so that they know where they're going. And then usually they promptly die. But all things, you know, bringing it down to, you know, kind of where we started, that whole, now I lost my train of thought. Hang on a second.
It's about doing it all through the body, through the physical body.
Okay, thank you. The body is essential. I would be talking with people on the other side, and they're lined up waiting to come back. And over here, people are like, I'm out of here. And I, you know, after a while, it was like, what's wrong with this picture? This isn't lining up. And so at that point, I started to really do a little research and discovered that the body has to turn into light. Enlightenment is turning into light. It isn't this intellectual state of mind. Da, da, da. It's not an educational thing. It's a very practical, down-to-earth sense of presence and power in which you begin to generate light. That's enlightenment, true enlightenment. And then once you start that, then you begin to move past death. And then you move into what I call the realms of the immortals, for lack of a better term. I mean, there's lots of terms that I'm beginning to hear.
Penny, we're almost out of time. There's one question that I think is really important.
Okay.
And that is, why do you say that it is now critical for humanity to expand its consciousness?
Oh.
Is there a clock ticking?
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. It's critical for us to expand because if we don't, we're going to collapse and go back to very primitive, and we won't make that leap into becoming an eternal planet, eternal civilization, and eternal beings. And that was the message of the little men in brown robes that they said right off the bat. We do not want you to go backwards. You have collapsed. You've gotten to this point so many times. You have to expand your consciousness. And in order to do that, and we've got a lot of pieces in place, in order to expand that consciousness, or once we expand that consciousness, we will to some degree let go of land. Once you begin to be very, very powerful with consciousness, then you can begin to generate and manifest. And I have been in states of consciousness where, you know, the thought, boom, it's happening.
Instant.
Yeah.
Penny, I'm afraid we're out of time. We've got to leave it here.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us today.
Yes.
And if you want to know more about Penny's work, go to pennykelly.com. Check out some of these books. I guarantee they're the most riveting reading that you've come across in a long time. We'll be back in a few moments with more from the Virtual Light broadcast after this break.
Very good.
Thank you.